we need to be wary of comparing old versus young. It's never that simple. You know, what we want, of course, is a mixed age workforce. But and the trope that it used to be millennials, now it's probably Gen Zers, you know, and there I go using generational labels. But, you know, young people entering the workforce, they're flighty, they're undependable, they're disloyal. Well, that's not a function of having been born in a certain year. That's a function of being that age. When you and I were that age, we switched jobs a lot, too. Right? Because we're trying to find our way in the world. And the cost of retraining and rehiring those younger workers or early career workers is a way to leave age out of it entirely, is not factored into the putative cost, higher costs of older workers. There's no data to show that older workers are as a category, are in fact more expensive, especially since many of us, depending on our circumstances and our, you know, what's going on in our lives and our health and lots of other stuff, want to work part-time, want flex time, age into Medicare. You know, then there's no health care costs for the employer. We know how to skin this cat. We just need to think a lot harder and more creatively about how to do it.
Welcome. I'm Dawn Mathis, and this is 2-Year Greatness. Every day, you give so much of yourself to those you love. Through this podcast, I'll guide you on a journey to reawaken the greatness that lies within you. In each episode, you'll hear incredible stories of transformation from me and my guests that will inspire you to design and manifest a life that is in harmony with your soul's purpose. You are meant to live the life you'd love. Let me show you how. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of 2-Year Greatness with Dawn Mathis. I'm your host, Dawn Mathis, and we have a very special guest today. I'm just ecstatic that she's here with us. We have Ashton Applewhite, and she is the author of This Chair Rocks, a manifesto against ageism. She speaks widely at venues that have included the United Nations and the TED main stage. She's written for Harper's, The Guardian, and The New York Times. And she is a leading spokesperson for the emerging movement to raise awareness of ageism and to dismantle it. Welcome, Ashton. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Dawn. Thanks for having me.
So before we get started, I thought maybe if you wanted to give a definition of what ageism is.
Sure. The term was coined by a wonderful geriatrician named Dr. Robert Butler in 1968, at the same time as the civil rights movement and the women's movement were gaining currency to piggyback on racism and sexism. It is discrimination and stereotyping on the basis of age. A sort of more accessible way to think about it is that we are being ageist, which we all are all the time, no judgment, anytime we make an assumption about someone or a group of people based on how old we are. Typically, you or I am quote unquote too old for something, but it can also be too young. It cuts both ways. It's any judgment on the basis of age.
I'm glad you said that about the younger generation, because I have heard people my age and older say rather derogatory things about the younger generations in our society, and it's surprising.
That's now more acceptable. Yeah. And while we're breaking bad habits, here's a suggestion to throw your way. To try to wean yourself, as I am trying to do myself, of using the word generation instead of age group or age cohort. Because when we use generation is a super useful word, but we overuse it. It has no scientific meaning. Scientists have never agreed on what it means. And what it does is tend to associate itself in all our heads, no judgment. I hope you don't feel I'm being finger pointing, with all the, you know, tropes and cliches that get associated with Gen X, Gen Z, millennials, boomers. So it fosters stereotyping, and it also makes age more important than it deserves to be. race, class, gender, ethnicity all play a much bigger role in shaping our experiences and our affinities than age does.
Okay, so we should, not should, but a good way to talk about this, instead of using the word generation, is age cohort and age group.
Age cohort, age diverse, or just a people of all ages. You know, it's a tough habit to break because generation is so handy, but it lumps us into it, by definition, it assumes that everyone born within a certain set of years, and mind you, no one can agree on what those years are, shares a set of characteristics. And that could not possibly be the case of everyone born at a certain time.
Right. Got you. Well, that's interesting that you should say that, because at one time I was a physical therapist working with the aging population, mostly in SNFs, the skilled nursing facilities, rehab centers, and home health. And now I'm a realtor, and I obtained my senior real estate specialist certification, and they have lumped age groups of people and called them different things, and here's what they want and here's what they do. So it's interesting that you should say that, because that's pigeonholing people, isn't it?
You know, it certainly tends to make us do that. And especially, I mean, I've often thought, like, physical therapists, it's really hard for a physical therapist who practices to be ageist, because no one has a better idea. A lot of the people you work with are older, of how diverse they are.
Oh,
one
yeah.
person is, you know, has terrible physical problems of a given nature at 68. Mm-hmm. Another 68-year-old is sailing along. One 75-year-old does their therapy. The other doesn't. It has to do with our personality, with socioeconomic status, not age, once again.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. And yes, I saw the gamut. And so it made my job very interesting. So I was on the plane. I live in Colorado, and I just flew to Dearborn, Michigan. So if the lighting's kind of funky, I'm in my hotel room. But one of the things that caught my attention in your book was that there is a little bit of a difference between the sexism, ableism, racism, and ageism, because if we're breathing, years from now, we're all going to be older. So nobody,
and unless we're incredibly lucky, we're going to experience physical incapacity for sure. And, you know, full on disability, wherever you draw. I mean, that's another line. Where do you draw it? One person gets along really well with a mobility impairment, and another person is hung up by what seems like a much lesser physical problem. So it's all relative.
Yeah.
But ageism is the one prejudice that we all encounter. And since it also affects us when we're young, it really does cast a shadow across our entire lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love for you to talk a little bit about where ageism came from. In the beginning of your book, you talked about how we as a society valued the older generation and how that's changed. So where could you just speak to where ageism comes from, just for the people who haven't yet read your book?
Of course I can. So where did ageism come from? You know, I'll speak to it in the context of the United States. There is a lot more old age than there used to be. And when times are tight or things are scary, and there are an awful lot of things to be scared about right now, starting with a global pandemic, we look for scapegoats. You know, and older people and younger ones, too, sometimes are convenient scapegoats. What happened? But, you know, people always wonder if it isn't better somewhere else, looking generally wistfully eastward. And there are indeed cultures and traditions that venerate their older members. Two things to keep in mind. And it's lovely, you know, it's lovely to see. And I wish there were more of that in the United States. But societies where older people are put on a pedestal just because they're old and are not often not great societies in which to be young. So what we really want is a world not where older people are venerated because they're old, or youth are worshipped because they're young, but a society in which of what I say equity across the lifespan, where everyone receives the support that we deserve. What has propelled ageism into every corner of the globe, the two driving forces are industrialization and urbanization, both, of course, fueled by the march of global capitalism, which tends to equate the value of a human being to their conventional economic productivity. Productivity is not a word I love, but if you do volunteer work, as a lot of older people do, or you watch a grandchild so the kids' parents can go to work, that's not accounted for. The enormous amount of looking after other older people that older people do, that has huge cash value, but it's never factored in. So those trends have driven ageism and urbanization, because fewer and fewer of us live in small mixed age communities. And anytime there's segregation and isolation, it makes it easier for stereotypes to flourish and for people to be discriminated against. And when a population is less visible, you know, so are the issues that affect it.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting that you're talking about productivity. I've been around many groups of 60 plus people, and have noticed that some of the organizations that use volunteerism as their main driving force actually talk about the number of hours and at a certain rate of pay, how much money that actually saves the economy or generates for the economy.
I mean, in a better world, we wouldn't have to justify our value as a human being in terms of how much, you know, money we make or don't make. That's a lousy metric of the value of human life. But newsflash, we live in a heartless capitalist world.
I was also along with your book on the airplane, I was looking at the AARP, I think it's the September issue, and they were talking about, though, that people 55 plus actually account for most of the cars purchased, products purchased, home maintenance and repairs, and all these things, where on the one hand they talk about productivity waning. This is the population that is spending the most money and has the most, as a whole, I'll say, discretionary income.
Yeah, and keeping older people out of the workforce costs the global economy trillions of dollars and the U.S. GDP many, many billion every year.
And why do you suppose the powers that be in these corporate entities don't see that?
It's puzzling, Dawn. It is. I mean, it does kind of astonish me that ageism trumps even the bottom line. There was a study recently that struck me that shows that the biggest bottleneck to older workers being hired is HR people, who tend to skew younger than the people they're interviewing. And they acknowledge that they are less likely to look favorably on an older candidate, at the same time as they acknowledge that the job performance of older candidates is as good or better than younger people. And we need to be wary of comparing old versus young. It's never that simple. You know, what we want, of course, is a mixed age workforce. But the trope that it used to be millennials, now it's probably Gen Zers, and there I go using generational labels. But, you know, young people entering the workforce, they're flighty, they're undependable, they're disloyal. Well, that's not a function of having been born in a certain year. That's a function of being that age. When you and I were that age, we switched jobs a lot, too.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're trying to find our way in the world. And the cost of retraining And rehiring those younger workers or early career workers is a way to leave age out of it entirely, is not factored into the putative cost, higher costs of older workers. There's no data to show that older workers are as a category, are in fact more expensive, especially since many of us, depending on our circumstances and our, you know, what's going on in our lives and our health and lots of other stuff, want to work part-time, want flex time. Age into Medicare, you know, then there's no health care costs for the employer.
Right.
We know how to skin this cat. We just need to think a lot harder and more creatively about how to do it.
Absolutely. So you were just talking about the ramifications financially to corporate America and capitalist America about the cost to them for their own ageism. What does it cost us as a society?
The human costs are just terrible. I wrote an op-ed for the New York Times that was published one Labor Day, and the letters I got were just heartrending. Imagine being told, and I bet some of your listeners have been told it, you know, that the very if they had a, you know, single career or built a primary set of skills, that being told at a certain point that everything you've learned is not only without value, it is being held against you, that you are quote unquote too experienced, or, you know, you have too,
overqualified?
Overqualified, thank you. Overqualified. Yeah. What is the possible response to that? No, actually, I'm less competent than you might be imagining. And it hollows out, especially for those of us who love to work, which is typically a function of privilege. We have work that we love, over which we have a certain amount of control.
Right.
To be told that you are not worth being hired to do it. I mean, it really corrodes your self-esteem and your self-worth, mm-hmm. not to mention the underlying fact, of course, that if you can't put bread on the table, can't pay your mortgage, can't feed your kids, you don't have any time to think about, improving your vocabulary or your attitude. You are just stuck at the bottom of a very dark tunnel, which in an ungenerous country, and government policy tends to blame individuals for their own, lack of work or not trying as hard as you could have, not acknowledging the systemic forces at work here, and ageism is very much one of them. And of course, it is compounded by sexism. Women have a much harder time getting hired after midlife, and if you are a woman of color, it's triply more difficult. I'm not sure it's a factor of three, but all these factors compound, and then if you have a disability, it's harder yet. So all those things add up in a way that is tremendously unfair, and it exacts a hideous personal cost and a huge financial one.
Yeah. It's just...
It's devastating.
It is. It's the perfect storm in an imperfect world. So what... I wanted to ask you this because I'm going to go a little off topic. My folks live in an independent living facility. My mom has dementia. My stepdad is a cancer survivor, and he takes care of her, and he struggles a little bit. But the place that they're at is just beautiful. But in reading your book, I've become more sensitized to seeing things like, is there a difference between ageism and the humor that surrounds it? Because they had these comic strips in the elevator where two men were golfing and one man said, my eyes aren't any good anymore. I can't see where my ball is. Did you see where it went? And the other guy said, yeah, I saw where it went, but I forgot. And I'm thinking, oh boy, I'm going to ask.
I thought it was ball singular. If he was having trouble locating ball plural, I was going to think like that was more than an optical problem.
Well, yeah, I don't. I think that would be harder for a guy to forget. But I don't know. We might have to edit this part out. That's okay.
I don't know.
It's my show, and you're on it. So,
Here's the thing. Pratfalls are funny. You know, those things make us laugh. So there is an element of, you know, if we can't laugh a little bit at the indignities that accompany daily life in myriad forms independent of age, God help us. On the other hand, discrimination is not funny.
Yeah.
And I really don't see anything excusable about, for example, these hideous birthday cards. That, I mean, they're just, you know, they're vile because they're full of self-loathing. Right? And and you have to think about whether you would ever send someone a card that mocked, in, especially in such brutal and unforgiving terms, what color their skin is, how fat or thin they happen to be, you know, who they sleep with. And you know, most of us would not. Yeah. And there is no reason that a joke on the basis of age is any more acceptable. And the weird thing about ageism, all stereotype relies on what scientists call othering, seeing a group of people as other than ourselves.
Yes.
You know, other color, other sports team, other religion. And when we other them and make them sort of more distant from us in that way, their well-being becomes less of a human right. The weird thing about ageism is that that other is our own future older selves. It takes root in this sort of delusion that we aren't going to get old, that we may, you know, God forbid we should admit that we are old, when in fact, of course, each of us wakes up a day older. Aging is not just something annoying old people do. You know, we embark on this journey the day we're born.
Right, right. In your book, which, by the way, I highly recommend that people read. It's a great book.
And fun to read.
And fun to read and funny as hell. There's some funny stuff in there. And you're a very articulate writer, by the way. Just beautiful with the way you describe things. So
thank you.
Absolutely. So a couple of things that I love in your book was the word you used, agefulness. And it's helped me to use that word for myself as I look in the mirror and to actually praise my body and praise my mind and praise my accomplishment and praise the things that I have yet to learn. And that word just embraces all of that. And I hope the people listening take that word and embrace it into their own lives, because agefulness is a beautiful, beautiful word.
Oh, thank you. I did make it up. I love what you said. I have not been using it myself in the same way, although I certainly try, you know, when I look at the face in the mirror, especially first thing in the morning, to not be critical. Sometimes I think it's the biggest ask of all, especially of women. And then I get mad at myself because here we are talking about how women look and I'm digging the hole deeper, you know, as though that was such the most important thing about us. But, you know, we have this idea of age as simply a process of loss because we live in an ageist culture. The losses are real. And you will not hear me, you know, downplaying them. I am no Pollyanna, the losses. But what we don't hear about are the is the other side of the coin, the ways in which aging indisputably enriches us. And my evidence is that no one actually wants to be any younger. I ask people and their faces light up and they're like, no, you don't get to just like swap out your cartilage or, you know, seventh grade. You have to actually, you know, erase.
Go back.
And and then people's faces go all squidgy. And then they realize, no, because I have earned all the things. I've become ageful, if you will. And no matter how apprehensive they might be about the years ahead, they know, we know, that our years are what makes us us. And that's why I like ageful. And also I put it in there as a very specific antidote to the word ageless, which is used to sell everything from anti-aging creams, where it's clearly ageist, to anti-ageism campaigns. New York City, where I'm from, launched an anti-ageism campaign. Yay! All on bus shelters, all over the place. Yay! Showing people of all sizes, stripes, ethnicities. Yay! And the name of the damn thing is Ageless New York. And that's a problem, because it's saying that age is a negative.
Yeah.
Why would we want to be without it? It's an integral to our identity.
Yes, I am rethinking and reprogramming my mind as I'm listening to you. So I think I'm going to go back and read the book again.
what a big compliment. That's it's double edged, because age is also much less important than we think it is.
Yeah.
A really interesting thing to think about is that, of course, every newborn is unique, and 7-year-olds are all different from each other, but they are way, way more alike developmentally, socially, cognitively than 27-year-olds, who are likewise way more homogenous than 57-year-olds, and so on out, as we are shaped by our unique set of circumstances, right? There's more unique experiences to make us our own quirky selves. So the older a person is, the less their age tells you about them. And I think it's important to say how old we are, but mainly because when you don't, people think you want to be taken for younger. But in my ideal fairy rainbow unicorn universe, we wouldn't know. We wouldn't ask. We wouldn't need to know, or we wouldn't need to know right up front. It would not be such a prime identifier. It would be up there with whether we have freckles and live in Lithuania as an important component of our identity. But it says fundamentally so little about us.
Mm-hmm.
No, not what I'm interested in, not what my politics are, not how strong or weak my body is, et cetera, et cetera. And I would like it to be demoted as an identifier. I'd like it to be on the third page of a doctor's chart, for example, in the hospital. It's real. Medications and all sorts of stuff change as we get older in a way that medical practitioners need to know. But let's remove it from that first, or dating sites for that matter. Just look at me. Evaluate me for whatever, whether I have arthritis or whether you want to take me to dinner on Saturday night. And let's try and, as a thought experiment, not have that number to attach all the preconceptions, which we all have.
Yes, we do.
To, if we can avoid it, till other things come in and fill out the picture of the person. And then age just becomes a piece of the mosaic and not this portal through which we judge so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, one of the other concepts that I liked in your book was the older person in training.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I'm an athlete. So you mentioned the word training. It's like, oh, okay. And it's just, it's almost for me, when I heard that, it was like, okay, I am getting older every day, and I'm learning. So I am in training, and it's
That's a great way to put it.
Absolutely.
That phrase was, I attribute it to a geriatrician named Joanne Lynn, who called herself an old person in training.
Love it.
And it was very early. I heard it like over a decade ago, and I didn't realize how important the phrase would be. But I was like, oh, that's what I am. Partly, to be honest, because I probably was reluctant to identify as an old person.
Right.
But it gets you there. And the wonderful thing about that idea is that if you acknowledge, the minute you acknowledge that you are an old person in training, you are acknowledging that someday you're going to get old. And then you can't, that you get off this hamster wheel of age denial, right? You can, I mean, I love it when young people get that memo. When you're young, it's really hard to imagine being old. And I don't think that's ageism. I think that's the nature of, you know, the human condition. When I was a 7-year-old, I could not imagine why old people, you know, grown-ups, I meant, you know, sat around when they could be running. Like, what's wrong with them, right? So you don't, you can't imagine yourself being older. I think it's really hard. But if you can acknowledge, it's really a trick of the mind that someday you'll be old. then you start looking at the older people around you instead of looking past them, and hopefully observing behaviors that you think are commendable or behaviors that you think you would maybe not want to engage in yourself, to sort of compile a file of what it might be like. And then you don't get stuck in denial, and then it's really hard to let ageism sink its claws really deep in you.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, and I don't even know what this commercial is about, but there's the commercial about the guy who has a group of people, say, about our age, and they're becoming their parents.
It's progressive insurance.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about leaving the game early before they ever get there and stuff like that. What the deuce is that about? Do you want to speak to that, or is that
it's ageist because it's using parent as a substitute for age cohort older than you.
Yeah.
Right. It's using, and it's saying negative things about them. So an ageist comment is any comment, negative or positive. Stereotypes can be positive as well. The stereotype of the wise elder, you know, some elders are wise and some don't seem to have learned a thing along the way. Right.
Right.
So it is offensive, and it drives me nuts because, shocker, I listen to NPR a lot, and progressive insurance sponsors a lot of shows here in New York, at least where I live. And I would love some organized person to organize a boycott of Progressive until they cut it the hell out.
Yeah.
I also have a blog called Yo, Is This Ageist?
Yes.
A Q&A blog modeled on the wonderful Yo, Is This Racist? Which was around before I turned to this, with permission, which I started on the theory that, you know, he started it because we're awkward talking about race. Who could we ask and get an honest answer? I started Yo, Is This Ageist? Because these are new ideas to a lot of us. And
yes,
often we don't know whether something is or isn't ageist. So if you see or hear or maybe did something that you wonder if it's ageist, send it in to Yo, Is This Ageist? But I have gotten a number of queries about the progressive commercials because they're really annoying. You know, it's not okay to say, you know, it's not okay to demean anyone on the basis of aspects of ourselves that we cannot change. And even though we might want to wish all our children off the planet in a moment of rage, you know, once you're a parent, once you're older, once you're, you know, the way you are in the world, in terms of, you know, fixed traits, no one deserves to be denigrated or discriminated against because of them.
Right. Absolutely. So more on a personal note, if I can ask you this, Ashton, what brought you to this work?
I wish there was a meet cute story about, you know, the aha moment. There was not. It was more that I hit my mid-50s and realized that I was really, really apprehensive about the years ahead. And I was inspired by a chance comment of my mother-in-law, who was in her 80s at the time. And she said, why don't you write about something people ask us all the time? So when are you going to retire? Because she and her husband, Bill, were booksellers. And that started. So I started a project called So When Are You Going to Retire.com, and interviewing people over 80 who work.
Mm.
And learned in a matter of months, if not weeks, how much of what I thought I knew about getting older was way off base or flat out wrong. And I became obsessed with why so few people know these things. And the very short answer is that if age is presented as a disease, we can be persuaded to buy things to cure it, quote unquote. And if aging is a problem, we can be persuaded to buy things to quote unquote, fix it or cure it. And if we, and also because prejudice benefits existing power relations. If stay-at-home moms are arguing with moms in the paid workforce about who's a better mom, they're not organizing to close the gender wage gap so that women could choose whether or not to go to work. If workers are arguing about whether those old people should be fired or forced off the assembly line, which is a myth, the fallacy of the lump of labor, that old people take jobs away from younger people, or older people are bad-mouthing the supposedly self-indulgent younger people for buying expensive lattes or whatever. They're not organizing to get a fair wage for everyone. Age discrimination in the workforce is profitable, just like the gender wage gap. So all prejudice operates to pit us against each other, which benefits the status quo and distracts people from way more important questions of power and privilege, and keeps us from seeing and addressing the underlying discrimination and who it affects.
Like a smoke.
That was a really long answer.
Sorry. No, that's fine. So like a smoke screen, in other words.
Yeah, I mean, it's confronting bias is really uncomfortable. The first most uncomfortable step, and you've been so generous with me already in this brief conversation about all the things that you are thinking about and trying to think differently about and trying to relearn. That process of unlearning is really hard. It doesn't come naturally. I think it feels good if you learn something new that helps explain the world to you a little better and maybe makes you a better actor or happier with the way you act or you relate to people. Maybe it does me, but maybe all that shows is that I'm annoying and sanctimonious. The very first step here is to look at our own attitudes towards age and aging, which most of us haven't done except to put our heads under the pillow and go, oh, my God, I hope that never happens to be.
Right.
Whatever, you know, the it is, having wrinkles or walking with a walker, without stopping to think and talk to that person about what their life is really like. That's a big ask. But, you know, without learning more about what the experience is like from the inside, which is inevitably different and better than our preconceptions, partly because our preconceptions are so grim.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there's so much to this topic. It's like the proverbial iceberg where you just see the tip above the surface and there's so much underneath to unlearn, like you said.
Much to learn too.
Oh, I mean, yes. Yeah.
It's so interesting. Honestly.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I say, and I think it's true, I don't think you can read my book without feeling better about the years ahead. And part of that, to be cynic and make sure I don't sell any copies of my book, is, as I just said, because our sort of fixed notions are so grim. But it is also because once you get past that uncomfortable moment of going, oh, crap, I'm biased myself, I'm part of the problem. The next step, and it happens, you don't have to make that happen, make this next step happen. You start to see it in the world around you.
Yes.
I mean, does that map to your experience?
Totally, totally.
Yeah. And then you go, oh, it's not all me. It's not my fault. There are systems here that want me to think that way and want me to think negatively about my own age and want me to compare how I look and move to other older people and want me to fear disability or incapacity of any sort, you know? And once you see those forces and think about what forces, you know, what they benefit from, then if you're like me, you get pissed off. But at least you start to feel like, oh, it's not my bad. I am part of a system, as we are learning about racism, about systemic racism.
Yes.
You know, it is embedded in the culture.
Yes.
And you know, and only by seeing these larger systems at work can we come together to try and untangle them and hopefully dismantle them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in how to increase our awareness, from your book, I think it was chapter 9 that just has all these wonderful ideas about things that we can do to take steps towards learning more about ageism and also how to maybe talk to other people that we've noticed speaking in ways that are self-denigrating or denigrating of other people as well. I think it's chapter 9. But anyway, I actually, the last chapter in the book that talked about what we could do was very heartening to me. As well as the parts about, you know, being an older person in training and the happiness curve and the other things that you also talked about in your book. So This Chair Rocks, a manifesto against ageism, and I believe you have a website called thischairrocks.com.
I do. Thischairrocks.com, and I'm pretty active on social media, on Instagram and Twitter as @thischairrocks. I try and keep it to stuff that has to do with ageism. No pictures of puppies. Maybe you don't want to follow me because you want pictures of puppies. It's just, it's real. I mean, sometimes I think of the work I do as like cleaning a really dirty window. You know, we have a ton of work to do because it's so unexamined, but you can really see where you've been. And the minute you start to unsnarl this, I think, you know, you feel lighter.
Yeah. Yes.
And more engaged with it. And it's way better than going through life dreading our futures. There are things to dread. They're ending up alone, running out of money, getting sick. Those are real fears. But our fears are way out of proportion to the reality. And those fears around aging make us more vulnerable to exactly that. Literally, a negative attitude towards aging is correlated with lower health outcomes. People with what they say they call a positive attitude towards aging, mm-hmm. which I call a fact rather than fear-based attitudes towards aging,
yes,
live longer, are less likely to develop Alzheimer's, even if they have the gene that predisposes them to the disease. Can you believe that? Walk faster, heal quicker,
yep.
All these outcomes, which you are in control of because you are in charge of your attitude.
Absolutely. And our thoughts.
I mean, your attitude. I mean, I don't think you can turn a pessimist into an optimist, but you are in charge of how much you know about aging and ageism. And the more you know, the less fear it holds. And that fear is really bad for us.
Yeah, fear is bad for us on many different levels. And so what is the best way to get your book?
Well, you can get it off my website, thischairrocks.com, where there is a link to all the different independent booksellers. The cheapest way, I hate to admit, is Amazon. But if you do have an independent bookseller, they will certainly order it for you. Any old way, bootleg it. Just read it.
What? Remind us again what your podcast, your Q&A is called.
It is called YoIsThisAgist.com.
Okay, great.
And I'm easy to find. I'm the only person named Ashton Applewhite in the world. So if you can't find me, you're not looking hard enough.
Okay. Well, Ashton, I just want to thank you again. And I know that the listeners are going to get a lot out of this particular podcast. They have ways of finding you. Seth will have all the ways to connect with you in our show notes. And I just want to thank you again for your time, and I hope to meet you in person someday.
Thank you, Dawn. I would like that.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody. This is To Your Greatness with Dawn Mathis, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Thank you for joining me on To Your Greatness. If you're inspired by what you heard and are ready to take a deeper dive into your own life's purpose, I'd love to offer you a complimentary life reflection session. In this session, I'll help you get clearer about what's been holding you back and how you can rediscover the greatness that lies within you. If this is something you would love, I invite you to head to my website, toyourgreatness.net, where you can take the first step in this journey. Spots are limited, so claim yours today. You are so much more than what you do for others. I believe there is a dream inside you just waiting to be fulfilled. If you agree, I invite you to take that first step and visit www.toyourgreatness.net right now. I can't wait to meet with you. My name is Dawn Mathis, and this is To Your Greatness. Remember, your greatness lies within you. See you next time. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I invite you to subscribe and keep listening. Remember to like, share, and review this podcast to help other listeners like you find their way to this heart-centered community. Thank you so much.